You're listening to the Jim Inkster Show on WRKF 89.3 FM in Baton Rouge. Jim Nickel here on Monday, September 29th, sitting in for Jim Inkster, taking a well-deserved day off. Three interesting guests in today's program. Stu Rothenberg, who's the editor and publisher of the Rothenberg Political Report, will join us at the beginning of the program. He's the election night analyst for the NewsHour on PBS and does a lot of work on elections across the country. Joe Oliva, the Vice Chancellor and Director of Athletics, will join us in the second segment. We'll talk about LSU and the future of college athletics. A lot going on across the spectrum, including football. And then we'll close out the show with Dr. Gerald Militello. He's a medical oncologist at the Baton Rouge General Pennington Cancer Center. He'll be with us to talk about breast cancer awareness in October. All of that on the Jim Inkster Show on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. You're listening to the Jim Inkster Show. Jim Nickel sitting in for Jim Inkster, taking a day off, and deservedly so. Our first guest this hour, Stu Rothenberg. Stuart Rothenberg is the editor and publisher of the Rothenberg Political Report. That's a nonpartisan political newsletter, covers House elections, Senate elections, gubernatorial elections, presidential elections. He's a regular columnist for The Roll Call, which is a Capitol Hill newspaper. He's also someone you see on Meet the Press, Face the Nation, and has served as the election night analyst for the NewsHour on PBS in the last three election cycles. Stu, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Jim.
I know we only have about 15 minutes with you. You're off to meet one of our frequent guests on this show and a friend of ours and a fellow Louisianian, Charlie Cook. So we're going to get right down to business. You, the Rothenberg Report, one of the first, if not the first, to predict nationally the Senate would turn over to the Republican Party. Why the early prediction, and do you stand by that?
Well, you know, we have a rating right now of Republican gains of anywhere from 5 to 8 seats in the United States Senate. The Republicans need 6. I wrote a column a number of weeks ago saying that was our estimate, that's our projection, that's what we think is going to happen. But if you ask me personally, if you give me sodium pentothal, I'll tell you I think it's going to be 7 seats or more. And the reason we are where we are is the national dynamics and weakness of Democratic incumbents. There are 8, 10, 12 Democratic Senate seats where Republicans have serious competition. In about half of those, the incumbent Democrat is either, some of them are not seeking re-election, but the incumbent Democrat is sitting in the mid-40s. That's a bad place to be. There's a new CNN poll out that in the general election ballot shows Mary Landrieu sitting at 43%. And when you look at the map, the Republicans just have too many opportunities and the president is too weak. If the president's numbers could crawl back, and, you know, they've crawled back in the last day or two, a point or two here, but if they could crawl back more, then it would make me more uncertain. But right now I'm kind of comfortable with where we are. I think the Democrats would be lucky if they're to retain the Senate.
Stuart Rothenberg joining us on the Jim Inkster Show, 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Okay, so the president's numbers continue to lag. We have historically seen where presidents do better with approval ratings when the economy is doing well. Unemployment's down. The stock market's doing better. Housing starts are up. The economic indicators seem to be better. Why is this president continue to lag in approval ratings?
Well, you're exactly right. The numbers are not terrible, and he should be able to make the case that he's turned the country around. Voters just don't feel it, apparently. That's my best guess. They haven't internalized those new numbers. They don't have a sense of optimism. When you look at the right direction, wrong track question, is the country headed in the right direction or is it off on the wrong track? The numbers are still horrendous, really, really terrible. I don't know exactly why. I think it's, you know, 6 years into an administration, there's fatigue, there are lots of reasons for people to be unhappy. Republicans have never liked the president, conservatives have never trusted him. If you're a liberal Democrat, you might be disappointed that he kicked that can down the road. If you're a progressive Democrat, you might be unhappy with the U.S. military strikes. In any case, I think after these 6 years, people have generally soured on the president, and so they're not giving him credit, even frankly, though he might deserve it in some areas.
Okay, so let's fast forward to election night, not far away, less than 40 days, and and watching television, watching you on PBS, what are some early indicators some of our listeners should be watching as to whether this is going to be a bad night for Democrats, a good night for Republicans? Is Kay Hagan's race in North Carolina an early indicator? Is that something we should watch?
Oh, yeah, I think it is a good indicator. It is not the only indicator, and if Kay Hagan wins, that definitely does not mean that Democrats will hold on to the Senate. But if Kay Hagan loses, I think you can probably write the Senate off. The way these swing races, there are about four or five races that I recently identified as the races that will determine who wins the Senate, and they include Alaska, which of course will come in extremely late, Iowa and Colorado, again in the middle of the country, the western part of the country, Kansas in the middle, and North Carolina. So, and of those, boy, Kay Hagan seems to be running the best race. She leads Tom Tillis, the Republican challenger. She has a huge financial advantage. When I say she, it's her campaign and National Democratic money have a huge financial advantage in the last month of that race. So if Kay Hagan loses, that will tell you that Mark Begich in Alaska will lose. The Republicans win Alaska. It will tell you probably Cory Gardner will win in Colorado, and Mark Udall will lose there. So that would be that's an important indicator. I put it this way: the Democrats must win North Carolina, I believe, if they're going to have a chance to hold on to the Senate. If they lose North Carolina, it could be a really big Republican year.
Okay, so now we're in real fast forward mode. Assuming you're right, and the indicators show that you're on the trend that the Republicans take the Senate, we now have a Republican controlled House, a Republican controlled Senate. 2 years left in a president's second term. Does anything get done in Washington? Does President Obama go, you know what, I got to deal with these guys for the next couple of years? Let's meet in the middle on some of these issues, immigration reform, tax reform, other things. Or is it just stalemate for the rest of the way?
Well, I suppose anything's possible. And the past doesn't necessarily, what do they say at the stockbrokers? The past doesn't necessarily project future returns. Having said that, I think the president will not read the results as some sort of public assessment about where they want the country to go. He'll see it in terms of, well, you know, there were midterm trends, and the Koch brothers came in early and spent a lot of money. And so I think his reaction will be to say, you know, I know where we need to take this country, and I'm going to do what I can in terms of executive action, regulatory decisions, executive decisions, and let's just set up 2016 as a fight for the heart and soul of the country. And that's not a bad Democratic strategy, because there are plenty of reasons to believe 2016 is going to be a really good Democratic year, and as good a Democratic year as 2014 might be a Republican year. The Senate seats that are up, the presidential electorate versus the midterm electorate, the Republicans will have 2 years to now attack one another and divide between the various wings of the Republican Party. So I would think that the final 2 years of the Obama presidency will be much like the first 6 years, confrontation, demagoguery, and no compromise and conciliation. But, hey, there's always reason for some hope. So let's leave a little sliver of hopefulness and confidence there, but I wouldn't bet on it.
All right, 1 minute basically left with Stu Rothenberg, and we're going to get Charles on North Foster. Charles, make it quick for Stu Rothenberg.
Good morning, gentlemen. You mentioned the Koch brothers. Fred Koch said the colored man loomed large in the communist takeover of America. Don't you think the Republicans are using this mentality to oppose the president at every opportunity?
Stu.
Wow, that's an explosive question. I think there are a lot of reasons why people don't like the president, some of them personal, many of them partisan and ideological. I don't think it's primarily a matter of race. I think there are lots of African-Americans that conservatives, Republicans would love to support, including Herman Cain and Ben Carson. It's mostly about ideology, worldview, and agenda, and I think less about race.
Stu Rothenberg, the editor and publisher of the Rothenberg Political Report. Stuart, thanks so much for joining us on the Jim Inkster Show. We know you've got places to be, and we look forward to watching you on election night and seeing how you
thanks,
do.
Thanks, Jim, and I'll tell Charlie you said hi, too.
Please tell him all the listeners said hello to Charlie Cook.
Okay.
Stu Rothenberg, well-known voice and face on elections and national politics, joining us on the Jim Inkster Show. Now we switch gears, as I always like to do when we do the Jim Inkster Show, is talk a little politics and then, of course, talk a little sports, and that's South Louisiana. And now joining us on the Jim Inkster Show, the Vice Chancellor and Athletic Director at LSU. Been there 7 years. It doesn't seem that long. And recently, congratulations, a contract extension from the LSU Board of Supervisors, Joe Oliva. Joe, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Good to be with you this morning.
Joe, you know, there's a lot we can cover on college athletics and LSU football and various things, but you're someone who's been involved in college athletics virtually your entire professional career, very well thought of in the college athletic world. You're on the NCAA Men's Basketball Selection Committee. You serve in a number of leadership positions nationally besides at LSU. Fast forward 10 years, what does college athletics look like 10 years from now?
Well, it's scary, and I think that where we're going, there are numerous lawsuits and cases in court right now that can really determine the future of college athletics, whether it's paying athletes or paying them straight up or paying them for their likenesses. There's a lot of things out there that can change. You know, you've got the concussions in football and other sports. There's a lot of court cases and things out there that in the next few years are really going to determine the future of athletics. We've got the NCAA it's still going through a process right now, but it'll probably end up that the five power conferences will have more autonomy to decide what kind of rules we want to live by. I don't think that that's a bad thing. I think that's a good thing because there is a distinct difference between the five power conferences and some of the other Division I schools. But I'll tell you, Jim, the future is really in the hands of the courts right now, and it'll be interesting to see how that all shakes out.
Joe Oliva, our guest on the Jim Inkster Show. You're on the selection committee for NCAA men's basketball. We have essentially a selection committee now for college football, the college football championship. It will be the final four, as I will call it, will be selected by a group, a subjective group. How do you feel about that?
I think it's much better than having computers do it and having the way it was in the past. I think that this group will spend more time studying it. I know from being on the basketball committee, I spent an enormous amount of time studying teams and watching games. And, Jim, they're not only going to pick the final four teams, but they're going to rank the teams from 1 to 25, I believe, and they're going to have a huge impact on bowl selection for the other games, too. So their job is very important, but I think their job will be better done than it has been in the past.
So you're on the NCAA Men's Basketball Selection Committee. My understanding is when LSU is discussed, you leave the room. Is that accurate? I mean, do people leave when their particular teams are being discussed?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. So, we have to get out and leave the room. And this football committee will do the same thing.
I was going to ask you that.
For example, Jeff Long's the chairman, and when Arkansas gets discussed, if they get discussed, he'll have to leave the room.
And same for Barry Alvarez. He's on there. He's at Wisconsin. And so we will see some ability to make sure there are no conflicts in that selection.
Yeah, I don't think that that'll be a problem. I know in the basketball committee, we all leave our allegiance to our schools really at the door when we go in that room, and these folks will have to do the same thing.
Joe Oliva, the Vice Chancellor and Athletic Director at LSU, 7 years and now a contract extension. When you got the job, did you think you and Annie would be here this long?
Yeah, I hope so, actually. Yeah, I mean, I'm not the kind of guy that likes to move around a whole lot. I mean, obviously, I was at Duke for 32 years, and I hope to stay here till we retire. So this is a great place, great people. I really enjoy it here, and you know what? There's more to do. I like to be at a place where there's always something to do, and there's more things to do here, and I like that. I like keeping busy and trying to make the place better, and that's the goal.
Joe Oliva is our guest on the Jim Inkster Show. When we come back, and we're going to take a short break, Charlie, Joe, we want to talk about your whole effort to do the facelift of Tiger Stadium. A lot of people look at the expansion, but really beyond the expansion, which is amazing, is your efforts to make sure that it looks better and presents better, and I think that's been a tremendous success. We'll talk about the facelift, and we'll talk about a lot of other things that are going on the LSU campus under Joe Oliva's leadership with new facilities. All of that coming up on the Jim Inkster Show on WRKF 89.3 in Baton Rouge. Welcome back to the Jim Inkster Show. Jim Nichols sitting in for Jim Inkster, taking some well-deserved time off. Joe Oliva, the Vice Chancellor and Athletic Director of LSU, our guest during this segment. Joe, you got to LSU, and one of your first efforts, and it's been a successful effort, is the facelift of Tiger Stadium. I want to talk about the expansion, but first of all, what made you take that on as one of your first goals?
Well, when I got here 7 years ago, I can remember distinctly walking down the hill by the journalism building and looking at the stadium, and my first reaction was, wow, it's big. And as I got closer to it, I kept saying to myself, wow, it needs some work. It needs to be fixed up. And actually, that got me excited because I just looked at it and kind of envisioned what it could look like. And you know, to me, it's so important because when people come to LSU, their first one of the first places they like to visit is Tiger Stadium. And I think that people's first impression of LSU can be reflected by what they see and what they think about Tiger Stadium. So I wanted it to be a showplace. I wanted it to be something that everyone could be very proud of 365 days of the year, not just the 7 or 8 days a year when we're playing football in it. And thanks to a lot of great donors and some great architects, and we've been able to fix the place up. I think the replacing the windows, I think, was tremendously important. We coated the outside of the stadium. We've redone all the plazas and replaced all the old chain link fences, and we've started to memorialize the great players and the great teams around the stadium, so you can walk around and get a little bit of the history of LSU football. We're going to continue to do that, and we're not going to stop. I mean, it's an old stadium. There's always things that need to be done to it. We need to turn a little more attention to the inside and keep renovating restrooms and concession stands. And every year we just have to keep doing things to modernize the stadium and keep it better and make it better. You know, it's like having an old house. When you have an old house, you've got to keep fixing it up, replacing the roof and painting it and replacing the plumbing and whatnot. And the same thing is true of an old stadium. You've got to keep it up and keep renovating it.
So another, I guess, goal of yours is to improve the fan experience. I mean, we are competing, LSU and other college athletics, and for that matter, pro athletics, competing with that high-definition television at the house. So is that part of the reason you have to continue to improve the facilities, continue to improve traffic, continue to make sure that fans want to come to the games?
Yeah, I think it's critical that our – it's obviously, from a financial standpoint, it's very important that we sell all the tickets. But also, from a competitive standpoint – I think our fans add so much to our team's play when they're loud and supporting the team, and you know, there's nothing like the atmosphere in Tiger Stadium when it's packed and people are yelling and screaming and cheering for the Tigers. So I want to win, and I think our fans go a long way to helping us win home games. So I want them there and cheering for our Tigers.
Joe Oliva, the Vice Chancellor and Athletic Director at LSU, joining us on the Jim Inkster program. Okay, Tiger Stadium looks fantastic. The north end zone, I'm sorry, the south end zone expansion completed. You pleased with the way that turned out?
I'm very pleased with the way it turned out, and the feedback that I've gotten from the fans that are inhabiting that space, they're very pleased with it. You know, the architects did a great job of designing the addition so that it's relatively close to the field, and the sight lines are terrific. To watch a game from the end zone, most people say that's not where you want to watch a game from, but it's a great place to watch a game. You can see all the holes open up. You can watch the pass patterns open. And then actually, you know, that's our coaches all watch video from the end zone. That's how coaches watch video of games. And it's a great spot. And all the amenities that have been added in there are great. The food and the refreshments and the restrooms, it's just been a great addition to our stadium.
Well, we all know football is important and does a lot for the university, but there are other athletics that you have paid attention to in your tenure, and you're trying to help improve. I was leaving Alex Box Stadium the other day and looked across the street, and there's a new tennis facility. Tell us a little bit about what we're doing with other facilities at LSU in athletics.
Well, I'm glad you asked about that. I want to win in everything, and I want all of our athletes to have a great experience, and you know, we've renovated the track. We've put in a whole new track surface out here. We've renovated the field house for the first time in 35 years. The field house has been completely redone. It's really gorgeous inside now. We just completed a renovation to the pool, to the natatorium. We're in the process of building a new gymnastics practice facility, which will give Dee Dee Bro what she's been desiring for 30 years and needs, a good, safe practice facility for the gymnasts. You've mentioned tennis. Our indoor tennis facility is going up right now. It should be open by March, which will help our tennis teams. I want to compete at the highest level in every sport, and having these kind of facilities will help our teams and our coaches compete at the highest level.
You talked earlier about video games, and I think it would be helpful for our listeners to sort of play that out a little bit. There have been video games that have portrayed in some fashion the likeness of college athletes, and there's been some attempts by college athletes to recoup some payment for that. And can you explain a little bit more about what's going on with that? Because I think that's an interesting case as to what we see with so much money involved in college athletics.
Well, there are numerous lawsuits out there that are challenging the rights of athletes to recoup money for their either the using of their name or their likeness. At most schools, when young kids come in, they sign a release releasing those rights for their years when they're in school, and that's being challenged. That could significantly change the whole landscape of college athletics if a young person could recoup money for their likeness or signing autographs or selling their jerseys or what have you. That could significantly change, and just not only from a financial standpoint, but from a recruiting standpoint. Think about how that could change recruiting if those factors came into play and schools could promise a certain amount of money to kids in the recruiting process. It would be a disaster, I think, if the best quarterback in the country could go to a school based on how much money they could get. It would really change college athletics tremendously.
Okay, so a good segue into payment of players. You've been involved in college athletics at a leadership level for a long time, and I know this issue has evolved over time. These student athletes do get some benefits, very good benefits, from the university. How do you feel about that issue, and where do you see it going?
Well, I think you have to think about these kids are getting a full scholarship to go to college. They get room, board, tuition, books, fees paid for. The kids that really come from a poor background have the opportunity to get a Pell Grant. A Pell Grant, I believe, is worth around $5,500 a year. So the kids that really need it can get money from a Pell Grant. So, and they get out of college with no debt. There's a lot of college students that go to school and have huge debt when they leave school. But on the other hand, I remember back in the 60s and 70s, kids used to get on scholarship. They used to get laundry money, and it was $25 a month laundry money. And that $25 went towards, it was really spending money back in the 60s and 70s. And I think that it wouldn't be bad if we figured out some amount of money that we could give these kids and call it laundry money, call it whatever you wanted to call it, to give them a little of spending money during the season. That wouldn't be during the school year. I don't think that would be a bad thing. But that was proposed by the NCAA, where they proposed giving kids $2,000 a year, and it got voted down by the members. And that's one of the things that if we had autonomy in the top five. The power conferences had autonomy to make decisions. The Power Five conferences could decide to give the kids a stipend, and that might be something that happens down the road.
So that's a great segue. The power conferences, you talk about those five conferences, and I wish I could rattle them off. I think I'd get close. But who they are isn't as important as my question is, what would be the purpose of the NCAA moving forward if these conferences were to, I'm going to use the word split off. Is that a proper term? Do they split off, or do they simply have some autonomies and maintain their membership and compliance within the NCAA?
No, the goal is that they would still be in the NCAA, and the five conferences, just to know, are it's the ACC, the SEC, the Big Ten, the Big 12, and the Pac-10, I guess they're called, the Pac-10. Those are the five. And the goal would be to keep them within the NCAA, but allow those five conferences to make some of their own rules. And really, it's a good thing to stay within the NCAA because, you know, everyone wants to think about football, but there's 30 other sports that are governed by the NCAA. You got baseball and basketball and track and tennis and soccer and all those other sports that fall under the NCAA umbrella. That it's a good thing. You know, it's good to be able to compete in the baseball tournament. And I don't think that the five power schools would want to pull out of the baseball tournament or pull out of the basketball tournament. So, you know, the five power schools may want to, and they kind of do right now, they're kind of out of the NCAA when it comes to football. You know, the NCAA, that football committee that's picking the playoffs, they have no, they're not governed by at all by the NCAA. They're an independent organization, not part of the NCAA. And football bowl games are not part of the NCAA. Football is kind of on its own. So I don't know, I'm talking in circles here, but the bottom line is those five power conferences would stay within the NCAA but be allowed to make some of their own rules.
Joe Oliva, the Vice Chancellor, Athletic Director at LSU. The SEC Network, it's launched this football season. I think it would be helpful if you could explain to our listeners this will be more than football. This will evolve into other sports. You will see way more LSU sports being exposed on television. Tell us a little bit about your experience thus far with the network. Are you pleased with it, and what should we be looking for in subsequent years?
Yeah, well, actually, our women's soccer team played on the SEC Network yesterday. Our football team played New Mexico State on the SEC Network on Saturday. So there's going to be a lot of sports. All of our sports will be covered at some point on the SEC Network. The SEC Network is the largest has the most distributorship of television sets in the country for a network that is in its first year. So for a first year kickoff network, we got into 90 million homes, which is the largest initial debut of a channel in the history of cable television, which is pretty remarkable. I think it'll help our recruiting throughout the nation. It'll help our brand, not just athletically, but academically. I think it'll help attract students to come to LSU. In the long run, it'll be a really good thing for LSU and for the league.
Joe Oliva, the Vice Chancellor at LSU and the Athletic Director. You have what seems to be a pretty stable coaching situation at LSU. You've got a football coach, basketball coach, gymnastics coach, baseball coach. Is that a good feeling to have, to know that you've got a good, stable situation in all of your major and non-major athletics, good golf coach? As an athletic director, do you maintain your eyes and ears out there as to what the talent is coming on? Not all these people are going to be here forever. Certainly some will retire, some may leave for other jobs at some point. As an athletic director, is that an ongoing job for you to keep your eyes and ears open as to the upcoming talent in the coaching business?
Well, you're right. We have a really good group of coaches right now. But my job is to always have two or three names ready in case one of them leave. And that's a big part of being an athletic director, is trying to keep your list up to date with the best talent out there in the country, and so you're ready to move in case something happens. So, yeah, I maintain a list for about every sport, and but I'm very pleased with the coaches we have right now. I think they're doing a good job.
Scheduling, football scheduling. Next year, Tigers head to play Syracuse in New York to kick off the season. Played in Houston this year. Going to play in Green Bay the year after that. Do you like the idea of having one or two games a year out of state or in a high prominent role for the football program?
Well, Syracuse is a little bit different than the other games. Syracuse, we have a home-and-home arrangement with them where we're going up there next year, but then they're going to come to Tiger Stadium. some of those other games, like this year with Wisconsin, even though we're going to Wisconsin to play, we're not going to their home. It's really two neutral site games. And, you know, people ask about that all the time, but the reality is when you play home and home, from a financial standpoint, it's not as lucrative as when you play at a neutral site. And I'll give you an example. You know, we're going to go to Syracuse next year, and we won't get any money for going there. And then when they come here, they won't get any money to come here. But when we go to Houston, for example, and we played Wisconsin, we get a payday that's pretty close to being equal to us playing a home game. And when we go to Wisconsin to play, and at when we go to Lambeau Field, we're going to get a payday very similar to if we played a home game. So if you add up the money, it's almost two for one by playing those neutral site games as to playing home and home from a financial standpoint. Plus, there are a lot of teams, really good teams, that don't want to come to play in Tiger Stadium, but they feel more comfortable going to play at a neutral site. So that's why we play neutral site games. Really, there's two reasons, to get a quality opponent, and from a financial standpoint, it's a lucrative game for us.
Couple minutes left with Joe Oliva, the Vice Chancellor and Athletic Director at LSU, on WRKF, the Jim Inkster Show. Jim Nichols sitting in for Jim Inkster, taking a well-deserved day off. We talked about a new gymnastics practice facility, the facelift over at the field house, a new indoor tennis facility. Folks, you know, however you feel about football, it certainly is the straw that stirs the drink. Is it the football and basketball revenue to some extent that allows you to do these capital expenditures and make these expansions in other sports?
Well, there's no question that football is the golden goose that stirs the drink here and takes care of our finances for us. You know, we're fortunate that we have an outstanding baseball program too that brings in some money, and basketball also brings in some money. But, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention TAF, because most of these projects that I'm alluding to, especially Tiger Stadium, has been done through the good help of TAF, and a lot of the funds that for the expansion of Tiger Stadium, the south end zone, that was done through a debt financing through TAF. TAF took out a loan for about $100 million, and that $100 million is helping to pay for the expansion of South Stadium, but also in that debt will be the gymnastics facility and the tennis facility. So I have to thank TAF for a lot of their support when it comes to those three facilities.
Joe Oliva has been our guest. We appreciate it, Joe, you joining us on WRKF. It's been very informative for our listeners. I got to ask you, with only 30 seconds left, you're a member of the Suffern High School Hall of Fame and the Rockland County Hall of Fame. We got to get up there and check that out. Pretty nice Hall of Fame.
I guess, you know, it's not bad. It's just a small little building, I think, in the county seat there, where they have some pictures of the folks in the Hall of Fame up there. So I haven't been up there in a long, long time, Jim. It's been a long time since I've been back there.
Joe, thanks for joining us on WRKF.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You have a great day.
You too. Welcome back to the Jim Inkster Show. Jim Nichols sitting in for Jim Inkster. Our guest this segment, Dr. Gerald Militello, a medical oncologist, one of the leaders at the Baton Rouge General, excuse me one second, at the Baton Rouge General's Cancer, Pennington Cancer Research Center. Dr. Militello, thanks for joining us. Are you there, Doc?
Yes, sir, I'm
okay,
here.
All right, sorry about that. I have a terrible cold and a cough, and I apologize to the listeners for that. But breast cancer awareness in October, tell us a little bit about why it's important that folks arm themselves against cancer, and what are some of the things they can do in October to be more aware of the risk of breast cancer?
Well, I think self-examination and mammograms are the two most important things. And if you have the incidence of breast cancer is now 1 in 8 women will develop breast cancer. If a mother or grandmother had breast cancer, your risk even higher than that. And I think just encouraging friends to have mammograms and doing those breast self-exams, I can't tell you how important it is. The earlier we pick up breast cancer, the greater your chances for cure are. And if when in the last 20 years, it's gone from 1 in 13 to 1 in 8. So it's a very prevalent disease. I mean, we need to get everybody aware of what's going on with breast cancer. I mean, family history is the most important thing, but the screening is vital.
Dr. Jeremy Militella joining us on the Jim Inkster Show, WRKF in Baton Rouge. Jim Nichols sitting in for Jim Inkster. Dr. Militella is a graduate of the LSU School of Medicine in New Orleans, trained at Earl K. Long Medical Center, completed his residency and fellowship at Tulane University. He's been treating cancer patients in this Baton Rouge community for 25 years, and we talk about breast cancer awareness in October, but we're fortunate to have a world-class cancer center here in Baton Rouge. The Pennington Cancer Center's got the region's only IL-2 cancer treatment program. Tell me about IL-2 therapy and what is it used to treat?
IL-2 is a type of immunotherapy which basically stimulates the body's immune system to fight the cancer. I started this program about 13 years ago. I went to MD Anderson University of Pittsburgh to learn how they were doing it. And since then, we've got a very active program. We are treating anywhere from 2 to 4 people per week with this. The interleukin, it's given in the hospital, but it's used for renal cancer and melanoma. And if you get a complete remission with this, the chances are excellent that your disease will not come back. I've had 2 people relapse in 13 years who have had complete responses. My first patient I ever treated 13 years ago with metastatic kidney cancer is alive and disease-free at this point. We are seeing just excellent responses. It's not for everybody. It's for probably 10% of the people who are diagnosed with these cancers, because you have to have a good performance status, be in good shape, and those are the people who get the great responses. We're very selective about who we treat, but we've been doing it long enough now that we know who's a good candidate and who's not a candidate. And there are other treatments for renal cancer and melanoma. They will slow it down. This is the only potential for curing the disease. And we say cure. If somebody's out 12 years with metastatic renal cancer and has no evidence of disease, there's an excellent chance it won't come back. And I've got patients I've picked up from around the country who are now out over 20 years who were some of the initial people treated with interleukin. And that's how I got interested in it. And so we are very fortunate. We have patients from Mississippi, Alabama, Florida. We've had people as far as Las Vegas come out for treatment. Recently had a gentleman from Denver. So we were getting people from all over, because we have one of the few centers in the country.
So, Dr. Militello, if one were to qualify, as I would call it, for the IL-2 therapy, would it be in addition to traditional cancer treatments like chemotherapy and radiation?
It's by itself. And the thing is, it's 2 5-day hospitalizations, and then you reevaluate. And if you're having a good response, you get 2 more 5-day treatments, and that's it. So it's 4 weeks of treatment, and you stop. You do nothing else. What's interesting with this treatment and disease is that you will get shrinkages up to a year after the treatment. And so it's because basically you're stimulating the body to fight this cancer itself, and the side effects are intense while you're taking it, but you recover very quickly. I mean, I have people get out of the hospital on Sunday, and by Tuesday, they're out doing the things they were doing before. With the first treatment, it takes a little longer, but it's a very, if you know how to treat them and know how to manage the side effects, it's very well tolerated. It gets a bad reputation because nobody, when it first came out, there were horrendous side effects, and no one knew how to manage them. And since we started doing this 13 years ago, I mean, the toxicity is 1,000 times better. We just know how to manage the side effects. So it's intense. I mean, it requires, I'm on the phone with the nurses all day long. I mean, but it, the whole key to doing this is having the proper facilities. We at the General have a two wonderful nurses and a unit that works great. They, my nurses have been doing this with me for two I have now for 7 years, and that makes all the difference in the world. They can tell a patient before it happens, this is what's going to happen to you in 20 minutes. And so having the proper people to do it and the right facility makes it a very workable project.
Dr. Gerald Militello, medical oncologist here in Baton Rouge, joining us on the Jim Inkster Show. We're talking about cancer awareness and early detection, but we're also talking about the IL-2 treatment. You use it for metastatic renal cancer and for melanoma. Why is it not something that could be used for other cancers?
Not really certain. I mean, it's been studied in other cancers, but these are the two that have been shown to have respond to it. So that's... I wish it worked as well as it did. Renal cancer is one of the most difficult cancers we treat, and melanoma. But it's just not been shown to have any activity in these other cancers.
You talked earlier in the program about breast cancer awareness and the importance of self-examination and the incredible increase we've seen in the diagnosis of breast cancer. As a layman, I have to ask the question, are we seeing more diagnosis because more people are taking the time to be examined and the awareness is higher? Or do you feel as a medical professional, there's just more breast cancer out there than there was, say, 20 years ago?
There's more breast cancer than there was 20 years ago. That's definitely, I don't think there's any question. We're more, and I think personally, it's our diet. I think 50% of all of this we can attribute to our diet. We're eating the high-fat foods. Everything that you eat has been processed and manipulated and has steroids in it. And we have just, you're seeing young ladies develop now at the age of 9 and 10, whereas 20 and 30 years ago, they were developing when they were 11 and 12. It's our diets, I'm convinced. Just seeing the increase, that's the only thing that could explain what we're doing. And I think it's the way we're manipulating all the foods. Nobody's eating natural foods anymore. Everybody eats processed foods. And we're picking it up earlier, but there's more to pick up. That's the problem.
Dr. Jeremy Militello, one of the leading oncologists in Baton Rouge. He's at the Baton Rouge General's Pennington Cancer Center, and he's joining us on the Jim Inkster Show on 89.3 in Baton Rouge. Jim Nichols sitting in for Jim Inkster. Doc, the IL-2 program is something that is not widely known. If you were not from Baton Rouge, where else do they do IL-2 programs?
There's a program in Houston, and that's the closest one. I think Tennessee has a program, but there's nothing in about a 5-state area. We're the only ones doing it around here. So there are 70 centers around the United States, and we're one of the 70 centers that do it. I don't have the list in front of me, but it's there's nothing in a several hundred mile radius from us. So that's why we have been all over the country letting people know. We have people from Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Florida. And then we're getting calls from all over the country now because we are one of the bigger centers. We're one of the bigger centers doing this, and I get calls weekly from people just asking questions and wanting to know how we're doing this. Would you treat this patient? Is this person a candidate for it? There's one center in California. There's none in Nevada because we've gotten patients actually from Nevada. So it's really fascinating, and I just love it because I've never, up until 13 years ago, I had never had a patient with renal cancer respond to anything. And now to have people alive and out a few weeks ago, I had 4 people in 1 week who were all out over 5 years with metastatic renal cancer. That's unheard of.
Melanoma. We talked about breast cancer and the increase in the diagnosis there. Louisiana is a big outdoor state. We like to fish. We like to hunt. We like to you know, go to football games, and we do a lot of things outside. Breast cancer can be traced to a great extent to, as you call, as you stated, diet, but also family history. Melanoma, how much of that is related to exposure, and how much of that is related to heredity?
I think most of it is related to exposure. There is a small hereditary component, but it's mainly our lifestyles and the sun. And the big thing now is the tanning booths.
Mm-hmm.
One visit to a tanning booth actually increases your risk of melanoma tremendously. I am shocked. I was reviewing all of this a few weeks ago, but that is really dangerous. I mean, stay out of the tanning booths. I mean, their incidence of melanoma just quadruples if you and only one visit. I mean, so, but it's the sun exposure. If we could do anything, this is something that's very preventable, using number 30 sunscreen, staying out of the sun, wearing protective clothing, because melanoma is a deadly illness. There are several new treatments on the horizon with melanoma. Again, none of them show any long-term benefits. I mean, they're 6 months to a year. Interleukin is still the only treatment out there that can offer you long-term survival if it works.
Why is melanoma so fatal? I mean, it seems to me as a layman that a skin cancer would be more curable than say cancer of an organ, a kidney, or things of that nature.
Mainly because it's a rapidly growing tumor, and once it has spread from the skin, it attacks the liver, the lungs, and the bones, and the brain. Those are the, and it's just a rapidly growing tumor. It can actually do you in a matter of weeks to months. I've had people die within 2 months of being diagnosed with metastatic melanoma. It grows that rapidly, and up until interleukin, we had nothing that worked on it, and now we have Yervoy, we have Zelboraph, there's a PD-1, a new drug that just got released about a week ago, but no long-term survival with any of these other treatments.
Dr. Jerry Miller, I'm sorry, go ahead, Doc.
There are some really good things coming along, and we're hoping even looking at possibly combining some of these drugs with interleukin, but that's a ways down the road. But so there's some definite improvement, but we still haven't gotten there yet.
A couple minutes left with Dr. Gerald Militello at the Pennington Cancer Center at Baton Rouge General. Fortunate to have someone of his history and his experience and his knowledge in our community. I was at the legislature, spent a lot of time there. They talked about arts and medicine while we were at the legislature this year, and I found it kind of fascinating. Didn't realize how big a role that had. Y'all have got a unique program at the Baton Rouge General called Arts and Medicine. Tell me a little bit about what this is about.
This is, you know, cancer affects the patient, the whole family, and it's a physical, it's an emotional thing. And your emotional status plays a big role. You can will yourself to live or die. And this arts and medicine has just been wonderful. Since the Baton Rouge General started this 2 years ago, we've just seen patients love it. It gives patients a way to think about things other than their cancer. It's we're doing painting. They have music therapy. We have big partnership with the Manship Theater and LSU School of Medicine. They're actually performers that come to the Baton Rouge General. There's live concerts every Friday. We have patients who, once they get involved in this, they're coming and playing music for our patients. We have patients taking chemotherapy, participating in the painting. But it just gives people a way to focus on something besides their cancer. And it's just real important. I can take two patients with the same diagnosis but a whole different outlook on life, and one will live 3 years and the other will live 3 months. So it's just another aspect of treating the whole patient and not just treating the cancer, but treating their emotional state. And we get the families involved with this. We get patients involved with this. So it's been very, very productive. We had the program for the first time last year and had over 300 people there, and we're hoping for it to be even bigger and better this year. But
less than 1 minute. Go ahead, Doc. Go ahead.
Sir?
I was just saying we have less than a minute left, and I wanted to hit one other topic, and that is,
right.
And you may have been talking, you were going that way, I think, and that is the Cancer Awareness Event. It's Thursday, October 23rd. You want to tell us a little bit about that that's coming up at the Baton Rouge General?
Yes, this is a free event. Registration is required. You must be 21 years or older to attend. Just call the Baton Rouge General or go to batonrougegeneral.org for information on it. But it's a free interactive painting event that promotes cancer awareness and early detection.
Dr. Militello, thank you for joining us on the Jim Inkster Show. Jim Nichols sitting in for Jim Inkster. Hope you enjoyed today's program. We thank our guests, Joe Oliva, Stuart Rothenberg, and Dr. Gerald Militello, all part of today's program. Thank you.
Podcasts of The Jim Inkster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Inkster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.